Hello and welcome to Academy of Blues, your one-stop shop for all blues clues, news, reviews, and previews. Everton and Palace are title contenders, apparently, with 100% win records. Leeds scored 7, but have a goal difference of 0. We've seen 2-4-3s and 2-5-2s. Bissouma hit Lewis with a sweet kick even Chuck Norris would have been proud of. Son scored 4, Kane assisted 4 in the same game. Thiago Alcantara made a record number of passes in one half, and Gareth Bale is back at Tottenham, but they'll still ruin it. We've already had 3 hat-tricks and 4 red cards. We are only 2 weeks in, so hold on to your seats, folks, because this Premier League season will be wild. Focusing on our first true love, Chelsea Football Club, our game against Liverpool was going at least okay until NFL legend Andreas Christensen decided to tackle Sadio Mane to the ground, earning himself a sending off and a spot in the NFL Hall of Fame in the process. Second half started and Tomori was brought in for the unfortunate Kai Havertz. With a silky smooth Liverpool move that finished in a Mane goal and a classic Kepa moment, Liverpool secured a 2-0 lead before Jorginho missed his first penalty in the Premier League. Here to make sense of the miserable day at Stamford Bridge is my friend and co-host Daniel Gonzalez, who would have rugby tackled Kepa Arrizabalaga instead of Mane. Daniel, how are you dealing with another loss to Liverpool?
Oh, you know, I'm used to it at this point. At least losses at Stamford Bridge. It's becoming a little bit too common.
That is unfortunate. I'm hoping that Frank Lampard and his brand new frontline ammunition, hopefully that's going to change that. Because, like I said, it is truly miserable losing to Liverpool, and especially at home.
I can't agree more. But there are still positives. I know you are absolutely miserable. I could tell from your text during the game you're miserable the entire time. But I feel like there's positives to bring out of this game. So we could balance each other out with each one.
Actually, it's good that I've had at least a day to process this loss, because I'm not all doom and gloom as I was while watching the game or in the hours that ensued the game. Listeners, welcome again. If you haven't subscribed to our podcast yet, go ahead and do so wherever you listen to your podcast. This is a brand new season, and now is the perfect time to get connected and subscribe so that you don't miss a single upload and single episode that we put out. We're going to be following all Chelsea games this season, and there's going to be about 189 of them. So you won't want to miss a single one of our uploads. You can also get in touch with us by emailing academyofblues@gmail.com. Send us questions, comments, concerns, show topics, anything you would like us to discuss. And feel free to follow us on Instagram at Academy of Blues. With that, we're going to head into part one, which is our Chelsea against Liverpool review. Daniel, so clearly this was a game of two halves. That's a cliche, but it truly was, in the sense that in the first half, we were all okay until the last minute when Christensen fell asleep and then woke up on Mane's back. And then in the second half, we were outnumbered, outclassed, and simply outdone by the best team in the league, at least according to the last season. So seeing that this is a game of two halves, I think we can look at the first half, or at least most of the first half, and take some positives. So what positives can you give us from that game, from the first half?
Well, number one, I'd like to give a quick shout out to Christensen, because the fact that he got his red card right on the cusp of halftime means that we can very neatly divide this into two halves of a game. And if nothing else, I'd like to thank him for that.
Yeah, he did it for us.
Yeah, for this podcast. So shout out to you. He's going to be our 6th or 7th guest on this podcast after Mourinho 3 times in a row. Yeah, in terms of positives, I'd like to say that Timo Werner once again looked lively for most of this match, but especially I think in the first half when we had a full team playing together. I think ever since he's come, he's looked sharp. He doesn't have to miss a minute. I remember one of his interviews, I'm not sure if it was when he first came or after the Brighton game, where he said that you don't have time. Like, if you were an elite player, you don't need, well, it depends on each player, but you don't need that time to get acclimated to a new league. You are just ready to go. And that's kind of that elite mentality that Werner has, is something that we've been missing for a long time in our strikers. And the fact that he has that mentality and he can back it up with skills and, with skills and confidence, I think that he's been perfect for us so far. And if we can get gears running at all other parts of the pitch, I think he'll be very quickly one of the best strikers in the league. That's one positive for me. And, like, let's say that teams do start to figure out kind of the way he plays and are able to watch more footage of him in the Premier League. By the time they start to figure out Werner's style, Havertz will already be clicking inside the side. Hopefully. Knock on wood for that. But if we can get Havertz firing on all cylinders, once we get all these players, and then Christian Pulisic still has to come back, and that'll be almost like a new signing at this point. I don't think you'll be able to just focus on the one player like we did when Hazard was around, where you can just focus on him and it kind of shuts down the rest of the attack. Once we have all these dangerous players who can all make dangerous runs, it'll be much harder to shut down that multifaceted attack. So that's all one positive about the about that. Secondly, I think in terms of like a general, the general way the team played, I think that we matched Liverpool pretty well. Without that red card, I think we'd be going into that second half thinking, okay, we might be a little bit on the back foot. There's been like, it's been a tight tactical game so far, but we do have the mentality to pull this out. And the one thing this game shows above all for me is that we don't have the maturity that this Liverpool team has. We have definitely the raw skill and the confidence is there, but the sort of errors that we made in this game were very evident of a younger side who hasn't played together too much. Whereas Liverpool showed all the signs of being, you know, a team that's played together for a long time with only small pieces that are being filled in. In terms of Thiago coming in, it's a small piece into a grand scheme of a team that already understands each other fairly well. And this is a Chelsea team that is still being put together. So I think that's where most of like the mistake, well, it's just immaturity, I think. But it doesn't, it seems like something that can be corrected in time. And a loss against, you know, Liverpool, you know, Premier League champions, Champions League winners not that long ago as well, is not too big of a shameful mark, in my opinion.
It's not. I would just like to say that one of your positive takeaways was immaturity.
Yeah, true. But as I'm looking at that in comparison to, say, for example, a Manchester United loss, hypothetically, that happened against, you know, a team not quite as good as Liverpool, in which you could clearly see that they were not ready, did not have mentality, did not have a clear game plan, or at least a coherent one, and they didn't seem to know which steps to take to keep moving forward. And this loss compared to that one, even though it was by the same margin, it didn't feel like Chelsea were ever losing hope. There were still chances being made in the second half, and it didn't feel like Frank Lampard was at a loss at what to do. He seemed like he was trying to make the right steps, and it wasn't quite enough to get there.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think another positive to take, you have to consider and remember that this Liverpool team has pretty much been together for the last 3 years. Jurgen Klopp came in 4 years ago, and there is not a single player who is starting for him today that was in the starting lineup during his first game. Jordan Henderson was at the club, but he wasn't a starter back then, and there were a few others. But it's basically his entire team. And then when you think about Frank Lampard versus Jurgen Klopp, it really did feel like, you know, somebody who has either a master's or a doctorate degree in what they're doing against somebody who's merely in college, Frank Lampard being the younger one, still inexperienced. He only has two seasons and a couple of months under his belt, whereas Jurgen Klopp has, I believe, something close to 10 seasons of experience. And he's obviously managed at the highest level. And so, yeah, we were outclassed. We were outplayed. Frank Lampard was tactically outplayed by Jurgen Klopp, because even before the red card, Liverpool did seem to be the more confident, the sharper of the two teams, and also a team that looked like they knew what they were doing better. One of the things that was very frustrating for me in the first game, the Brighton game, and I mentioned this in last week's recording, was you have Timo Werner, who's making these brilliant and smart runs, but you don't have a team that's learned how to pick him out yet. And yesterday, Liverpool was playing with an incredibly high line. They were almost at the halfway line. And Timo Werner and even Kai Havertz a few times had made fantastic runs. And it was as simple as just dinking the ball over the top in the exact same way that Jordan Henderson tried to find Mane when Mane was taken down by Christensen. It was just a matter of that. Our strikers are so much faster than Fabinho and Van Dijk, and they would have been through. But unfortunately, they just weren't there yet. They haven't gelled. And I think you see a huge difference in how Chelsea played and how Liverpool played in exactly that, because when you think about the first Liverpool goal that went in, Mohamed Salah and Firmino play this incredible 1-2 that just leaves like two Chelsea defenders in the dust before crossing it in, and Mane hits it in. For the second one, even though it was pretty much all Mane, what you see Firmino do, because he knows how Mane is going to press Kepa Arrizabalaga, was he points to him to keep going, one, and then he goes and he cuts out another passing option, forcing him to pass to Jorginho, which gets intercepted. And so that's another example of a team that's completely cohesive and a team that knows how to press, as opposed to Chelsea, who just feel a little bit undercooked. The good news is that it's only the second game of the season. This is coming on the back end of a pretty much an inexistent preseason. And there's a lot of work to be done, a lot of practice to be had. But I do believe that Frank Lampard will get it right, because tactically, when he was called upon in big games last season, he did come through. We beat Arsenal away. We beat Tottenham home and away. We beat Man United in the semifinal of the FA Cup. We beat Liverpool, and we beat Pep Guardiola's Man City. So I do believe that he has what it takes to match some of these managers and coaches and teams. But it also has to be done with a team that is actually truly reflecting what he's asking them to do. And to me, that takes time. There were a few things that were very clear to me. Those passes to Werner need to absolutely improve. Jorginho tried one pass over the top and it was completely mishit. Havertz, I think he needs to play at that number 10 role. I think that sooner or later, we're going to see him there, but it needs to happen sooner rather than later, because I'm sure, though it was a tactical move to remove him at halftime after the red card, I'm sure for any player, it does not feel good to be taken off at halftime, especially after all the criticism that he got from the media and from some fans, etc., following the Brighton performance. It's only still been two games, really a game and a half only, but...
Yeah, and he's been playing at a position. If we're playing a front three that consists of one player in his preferred position, and Mount and Havertz playing up there is not where we want to be, especially with every player in, every player back. Mount and Havertz are not going to be playing up there. That's not going to be their roles. Havertz is going to, they're both going to play deeper with Pulisic and Ziyech, preferably playing up on those wings.
And I actually also think that we only need one of Jorginho and Kovacic if we're playing Kante as well, if Kante's in. If he's not, then they do make a decent double pivot. They're still vulnerable on the counterattack, but they do a great job of holding possession and moving things along. But with Kante there as well, then what ends up happening is you have Jorginho and Kovacic that are very similar players in how they're always looking for the quick, short pass. And then you have Kante next to them. And it's almost like he's the one who's expected to be making the passes that are breaking the lines. And that just wasn't happening at all yesterday, because Liverpool were pressing very, very high. And what you needed was somebody who was able to break those lines and get a pass in behind. And at the same time, yesterday, what we were doing was we had a high line, but we didn't have somebody who was pressing the base of Liverpool's midfield. And so just those three right next to each other, it doesn't seem to work the way that it did last season. And again, still only two games into the season. But seeing them three play right next to each other yesterday just made me go, oh, we can so easily be outplayed, because we don't have enough options going forward and no real threats from midfield when it comes to attacking things. And then in some ways we're losing one player in midfield because Jorginho and Kovacic are somewhat similar. I know that they're not really the same, but they're similar.
But the role they play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is the outcome of what they do is always similar things. Short passes, keeping possession. They're not going to be the ones trying those exciting, risky passes. I mean, Jorginho tries a few times and he's done that quite a bit, but he's not quite as good at it as some of the more elite players. And it's definitely a problem we've had since Jorginho came in, since Sadi, like, trying to fit that midfield three together of Kovacic, Jorginho, and Kante has been a problem for the last three seasons, counting this one. Yeah. And it's never quite seemed to work out. And I'm just wondering if we just can't do it, if we can't play all three together at the same time.
Right.
I have two questions for you. Number one, what, with every player back, what is your preferred midfield?
I think right now I would want to see... I've always preferred a 4-3-3 to a 4-2-3-1, because the number 10 role... Anti Mourinho for sure.
Hates you so much. You just hate him that you can't even think of doing anything he would do.
Can't be found using the same formation as him. But really, the number 10 role, as somebody who plays right behind the striker, it's kind of going out of style because teams know how to defend against it. So, but I do like a 4-3-3. And so my ideal middle three would be Kante at the base, Kovacic on his right, Havertz on his left, which would have Pulisic as a left winger, Ziyech or Ziyech as the right winger, and Timo Werner as the striker. That would be my preferred formation once everybody's in, which is harsh because it would leave Mason Mount out of the starting lineup.
My second question is, so in regards to defensive frailties, Lampard likes that really high press. He likes that high line, crowding the ball, winning it back fast. And obviously it doesn't work for Christensen. He had a problem with it, didn't want to be in the rest of the game, so he took himself out. He did a Kepa and made himself the manager for a bit. But with all this like hype about Thiago Silva coming in, how do you think he's going to fit it? Do you think that's going to like actually solve our problems with a 35, 36 year old center back playing there? I mean, if he gets into the same position Christensen got himself into, he's not going to do any better.
I would say this is a cop-out answer in some ways. We'll just have to see. Thiago Silva played in a very high line in a PSG team as well. And this was a PSG team that did extremely well against the likes of Real Madrid in the Champions League because they were drawn in the same group. They did well against teams like RB Leipzig, who like to play on the counter-attack. They did well against Atalanta, and they even did well against Bayern Munich in the Champions League final. And obviously they've won the last like eight league titles or whatever it was in France, but that's not saying too much with the firepower that they have and where the rest of the league is. My thing with Thiago Silva is, yeah, he's a leader, he's a great defender, and he will improve aspects of our backline for sure. For example, set piece defending, I expect that to be much better with him in the back. But the way to protect him is, if we're playing a high line, is make sure that nobody has a whole lot of time to pick out a pass. Because the real crime in yesterday's game was the fact that Jordan Henderson just had acres of space to pick his pass and put Sadio Mane in. If you have that, it doesn't matter how fast you are. Like, you would literally have to have somebody as fast as Adama Traore in the back in order to deal with somebody like a Sadio Mane. And so that doesn't necessarily fix our issues, but it also nobody can solve those problems just by being faster than Thiago Silva. But I would say if he and Kurt Zuma are paired in the back, I think they'd have a good partnership because they both speak French. And supposedly we'll have Edouard Mendy back there as well, who is also French or does speak French. He's Senegalese. So you would think there's at least some cohesion and some sort of like a better line of communication between the two center backs and the keeper. And so I can't see Frank Lampard changing his tactics way too much. But what I do think will happen is we do have a high line. The only way to make sure that we don't get caught on the break like that is to make sure that no midfielder or their center backs or whoever's back there, they can't have that much time. Meaning then our team just has to press from the front, like all the way up. And it's doable because we saw it with Liverpool. I mean, even our keeper had a man marking him pretty much. Like whenever he'd get the ball, somebody would just be running him down and he would have to either pick a pass quickly or he'd have to force it long. And so it's doable. It's possible. But yes, it'll take time. And yes, it will lead to one or two errors here and there. But I think for the most part, it shouldn't be. One of our problems last season was the fact that those errors were happening almost every single game. And we were not winning because of those errors happening every game. With this, I could see teams taking advantage of us maybe once in every five or six games. But again, if we're putting that amount of pressure, if we're creating as many chances as we expect to be creating, even one mistake a game like that shouldn't be detrimental because we should be scoring more. So following the Barnes League game on Wednesday, we play again on Saturday. And this time, we travel to the Hawthorns and play against West Bromwich Albion. Now, West Brom just got promoted to the Premier League. It has been a long time.
I didn't even realize. Last time we played them was in 2018, in February.
So now, West Bromwich Albion have just gotten promoted to the Premier League from the Championship. They've signed Chelsea great Branislav Ivanovic and Chelsea great in the making, Conor Gallagher, on loan from Cobham. They gave up two penalties in their first game, so Timo Werner might get another penalty in this one. And they've conceded five. They conceded five against Everton in their second game. They conceded three in their first game, five in the following game. So things aren't looking too great for them. They are one of the teams that are expected to go back down to the Championship at the end of the season. Assuming Frank Lampard goes back to a similar lineup that he had for the first two Premier League games, you know, with the likes of Werner and Havertz and hopefully Thiago Silva playing. I also think that this game comes at a good time for us because it would allow us to get another 3 points on the table in the Premier League if we do end up winning it. We do seem to be a team that's stronger away from home than we are at home. So, I mean, this should be an easy 3 points, right?
Well, you know, West Brom hasn't won a game in the Premier League yet, having the worst time of all. It's probably a perfect time for them to play Chelsea at this point, since we just love being generous towards teams that are awful and starting to go down. Hopefully that's not the case this time.
Hopefully,
but it's one of those games where you look at it like, okay, we can write this off as a 3 points. This should be an easy 3 points. But having that thought worries me that perhaps the players have this thought like, oh, we're coming into this game thinking that we already won, and that's not a good mentality to have. Like every single game should be its own battle and its own thing where you focus on that game and you focus on winning it as much as you can. And I don't like having this casual attitude towards it, because if I have that sort of attitude, then I have like this superstitious attitude that the players are also going to have that feeling towards this game. So I'm taking it seriously. It's West Brom. They're tough. That's how I remember them, at least. They're a tough team to beat. So hopefully we just come in mentally prepared and take it away in like the first half and just win it outright.
Yep. Two goals in the first half, one in the second, 3-0 win. Let's hope for that. Let's get you to do something that you're fantastic at. Give us your predicted lineup for the West Bromwich Albion game. I know it's early in the week.
You know, I did predict 2-2 to the in the Liverpool-Chelsea game. I was right on Liverpool's goals. So that's on. You know, I'm going to say, I'm going to take yours and twist it a little bit. If Kepa starts that game, I'm going to say 3-1.
Wow. I don't think Kepa starts that game at all. I think Willy Caballero starts from now until forever, until Mendy is able to start playing.
He injures his hip, you know, in that Barnsley game or something like that, you know, twists his back trying to pick the ball up off the ground and can't start the West Brom game. He's getting up there, Caballero. You know, in a professional player's terms, he's getting up there.
I think even in just regular human terms, he's getting up there. But at this point, I think Frank Lampard needs to protect Kepa from himself because it's gotten that bad. So who do you think, as far as the rest of the team goes, who do you think starts on Saturday?
I guess it really depends on how fit players are. I don't think Lampard is quick to rush players back, but if he thinks that Pulisic is like Chilwell, Thiago Silva, Pulisic, and if they're back and if they're used as subs in that Barnsley game, I could see them getting starts for West Brom. It's kind of one of those perfect games to ease players in. It's a team that's down on its luck. The game should be fairly simple to put away fairly easily. I could see those players getting their first starts in that match. I don't want to predict the whole starting lineup because I'll do terribly and then I'll come back and I'll think of myself in shame, but that's as much as I'll say. What about you?
Man, now I feel like I shouldn't give my starting lineup, but I will because I'm bold and adventurous.
You're courageous. I'm proud of you. I'm not that bold.
I think we're going to go with a 4-2-3-1. And Callum Hudson-Odoi and Tammy Abraham are going to do well enough in the Barnsley game to earn starts on Saturday. And so our back four, or our back five, we're going to have Willy Caballero on goal, and we're going to have Ben Chilwell at left back, should he be fit. Thiago Silva, Kurt Zouma in the middle, Reece James on the right. Then you have N'Golo Kante and Mateo Kovacic as a double pivot with Kai Havertz in front of them. Hudson-Odoi on the right, Timo Werner on the left, Tammy Abraham up top.
Wow. That is a bold prediction. Hudson-Odoi getting the start, I think, is the big one there.
Yeah, I think he'll probably start him. I could see him starting him, and then I could see Hudson-Odoi not doing well at all, because every time he's been given a start, he just doesn't impress at all. Okay, well, with that said, that's been our show. It's been a pleasure. Cap Chelsea on Saturday this week, and we will be back at it to review some of those games and look ahead to the games that are coming up next week. So with that said, I have been Maddie.
I've been Daniel.
And you have been listening to Academy of Blues.